Hello there, Verbal Shenanigans fans, listeners. When was the last time you had a real challenge in your fantasy sports league? Are you bored with the stale and mundane redraft league year after year? DynastySportsEmpire.com understands, and that's why they are the nation's leading dynasty league management company. Building a team from scratch is easy, but building a dynasty takes skill. Manage your roster with the same players, compete against the same teams, build fun, exciting rivalries for years. DynastySportsEmpire.com fantasy baseball season is heating up and leagues are now forming for the upcoming season. Visit them online at DynastySportsEmpire.com to start building your future franchise today. Must be 18 years or older to join. Rules may apply, but that is DynastySportsEmpire.com. We have a fantastic episode for you today. I'm excited to bring it to you, so strap on in.
Hey, this is Christian and Bert from Common Roots. You listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello everybody. Welcome on back. Verbal Shenanigans, year number 7. Rolling forward, if you will. Moving forward, not really moving up, but moving forward, certainly. Mike, hello, how are you? That is Mike there, and I'm Scott.
I'm doing well, Scotty. What is the 7-year gift? Like, I know, like, the first year is paper.
Right.
And was it 50 is golden, or is that silver?
Yeah, 50th is... The only reason I know this is because I have a joke in my act, or used to, I haven't done it in years, but I used to have a joke in my act. 50th is gold, and 25th is silver.
Okay, let me look that up. Just the 7-year anniversary.
And the only reason I know 5 years is because it's part of the punchline. It's the wood anniversary. So, we just celebrated our wood anniversary 2 years ago.
If I read this correctly, it's copper. So go out and get a nice shiny penny, and you're welcome.
It's about what we've grossed. It's about what we've grossed over the years, a penny maybe.
That would be the one time, you know. Yeah. And we probably spent like $100 going out to Pennsylvania to do stuff, and then it's like, ooh!
That's okay.
Now it only costs us $99.99.
But anyway, welcome to the show. If you're tuning in, last week we had a really fun guest. We had Tammy Lane on, who Tammy Lane was, she works for K&B Effects and did the makeup on The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So really cool episode last week. And this week is no different. This week is a little bit different. I am sweating. You ever notice in gray shirts, just sweat more in gray shirts? You're wearing a gray shirt too.
Yeah. I never noticed a difference. Like, I even remember like going to sporting events wearing black. And I think like my uncle's like, oh, you're going to die wearing that. I'm like, no, I never felt a difference in color tone.
Are you,
whether I sweat more or not.
Are you a sweat, like, I'm a sweater, like, if I sit in front of the computer for a long time in like one position, I like raise my arms, I'm like, oh my god, I'm sweating profusely.
If it's humid, it will catch to me. When I exercise, it's pretty decent, but like if I'm sitting around, it's a little warm, maybe not as much.
Yeah, I'm like a guy who, like, as soon as I get warm, I feel like it escalates quickly. Like, if the heat's on too high, I'm like, I start overheating immediately. Like, I was also like the weirdo that wore shorts to school like every day in high school. So,
really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was. I don't know. I just liked wearing shorts. I still am a shorts guy, and I'll still like go take the dog out here. It's like 30 degrees. I'll take him out in like my shorts and sometimes bare feet. Like, I don't even think twice about it. But yeah, I was that loser who wore like shorts. And then like the one time I remember my mom like made me wear pants because it's too cold. And then like, oh my god, everybody's like, oh my god, you're wearing pants. Like, yeah, I was that weirdo. Yeah. So
I just imagine like your mom holding you down and like screaming at your dad, jump on him. No.
Yeah.
No.
I haven't had much fashion sense my whole life. My whole life I've been wearing flannels, shorts, and a big chunk of my life I wore a lot of hockey jerseys. That was like my thing for a little bit. But that's really, still now I basically wear shorts and flannels. That's like my only thing I wear.
I'm not really that much of a fashionado. I would probably say 90% of my t-shirts are basically either sports or Disney stuff that the wife got me.
Sure, blame the wife. Where are you going in a couple weeks, Mike?
Yeah.
Where are you going? I would like to, this is where like if I had the time to like edit podcasts, I would go like back like I think, I don't know, a month ago when we were talking about Oxygen Lady and the crew. And rewind and be like, this is the last Disney trip we're taking for that. I told her the next one's going to be my pick. And then I rewind it to like a couple months before that. And you're like, I said, this is going to be the last, but I don't have time to do that. Where are you going in a couple weeks, Mike?
Disney for the weekend, a Disney resort. We're not going in the parks. We're just going to be doing the resorts, hopping around restaurants, stuff like that.
Oh, why are you going to Disney again?
Well, it's her birthday, so that's basically, generally, if it's her birthday by rule, it's going there. Now, I had to basically inform her.
You laid the law down.
Well, no. This is different than that conversation. I mean, this is the first time this has occurred. I'm going to have to record the Daytona 500 because it lands right on her birthday.
Oh no.
And I brought up now next year, the NFL is going to an extra week.
Uh-huh.
So the Super Bowl would be her birthday weekend. It's where I kind of like, now I understand this is, I probably have no hearing on this, but I will say the Super Bowl, I do want to watch that. I do not want to be.
You could be surrounded
in like the tiki room, wondering how the Washington football team is doing if they make it.
Wow, Super Bowl, pretty bold guess there. But what's better than
saying that,
what's better than watching the Super Bowl with like Pluto and Buzz Lightyear? I mean, it would be a great time. I think you should go for the Super Bowl. In fact, I think I'm going to tell your wife that you said you really want to go for next year's Super Bowl and the Daytona 500.
Well, I will miss the Daytona 500. I will have to record it because it's literally on the birthday. I can't make an excuse for that. I won't have to worry about the Super Bowl on her birthday for 6 or 7 years. I don't know how the leap years.
No. But I think you should go celebrate the Super Bowl at Disney. You might as well. She's smart. She's got her birthday, but then she's peppered in other ways that are important that you have to go. So why not add the Super Bowl every year? Before you know it, you're going to be moving just outside of Orlando and, you know, just visiting on the weekends.
Well, she did bring up, like, retirement, we should move to Florida, and then she can get, like, the really cheap pass holders, and then, like, when I have no job, I will be forced every day to go to the park, and that'll be my life, and, you know, people go golfing, they play bocce, I just show up every day to Disney.
I don't know how long I can do this. I mean... If you're, we can't be the podcast where one guy lives at Disney World. It's not cool anymore, you know? I can't be like.
Is that the Haunted Mansion I'm hearing in the background? Yeah, I had to do this remote tonight, Scott.
Yeah. I can't every week, you know, we talk about life and things that happen during the week. I can't be like, so what'd you do this week? And every day it's like, well, Pluto, you should have seen what he did on Monday. And then, man, the buffet was fantastic. This is snowballing out of control, Mike. You're in too deep.
There's already 3 trips this year in the set up.
3. So
yeah. Yes.
Couple months ago you said we're not gonna go for 2 years or something like that, or at least till another year and a half, and that your next vacations were all your pick.
Yeah, I don't even bother anymore. I think I'm pretty much good enough, Scott. I basically ripped my soul out, walked up to Walt Disney, and he's like, yeah, I was looking for that. And this is my life right now, Scott.
You are steps away from soon enough, you guys are going to be writing your will and planning to be buried in like either Disney graves or right outside Disney World. You are that close, my friend.
Yeah, I will inform Disney that if my wife throws my ashes in their theme park, I will come back as a poltergeist and guarantee I will
end all existence. I'm telling you right now, if you die before me and you get buried in Disney World, I am not coming. I'm not standing there in my black suit and having all the characters mourning next to me like, oh, you know.
Yeah, you'll be wearing like Mickey ears. And...
Take it easy, Donald. He wasn't that good of a guy. Relax. You're overacting. Oh, my God. Three?
Pixar music is going.
So you're telling me, so the only places you're going to see in the world are now basically when you go to Epcot. That's going to be basically your travel experience.
There will be other travels.
Oh, Disneyland. You're right. Yeah, yeah. California.
Sadly, that is one. Yes, yes.
I feel like
Tokyo Disney eventually. At least I can go to another country in that scenario.
I feel like you've given up. I feel like it's over for you.
Well, my rough plans for 2022 is like a driving tour of Tennessee where we go to Memphis and Nashville and then go up to see the NASCAR race up in Bristol on the Sunday. But I'm sure it'll be like, wait a minute, that's Dewey's birthday.
That's Goofy's bar mitzvah. I feel like I can't help you. I feel like you're, you know, like when your friend, when you have like a friend or something that's deep in like, you know, they're drinking too much or they're in a bad relationship and you just can't really help too much. You are in a Disney spiral that I only see getting worse. I don't see it getting better right now.
Yeah. Yeah, as our friend Teddy, I feel like I'm in a cult right now. Like, even
true,
I spew logic. Like, no, I'm not in it. All along, it's pretty much like, well, you're doing these 20 things that the ringleader told you to do. Well, yeah, I wanted to do that, but he told me next year.
Right.
It's all going to be cool.
Yeah, you are like maybe 10, 20 years away from being on some kind of documentary on A&E. Like how you, like inside Disney, like how they got you in, how your wife brought you in, how you started going there. Like I said, you eventually live there. Before you know it, you're working for the park for no money. You're a volunteer and you're just indoctrinated. Yeah. You quit your job. Your family hasn't heard from you in years. I can't get in touch with you. I'm doing the podcast alone. You're that close to your own documentary.
Yeah, I'll be talking about, yeah, I survived on Mickey waffles and Dole whips for 3 years. I spent the entire time talking about it's a small world after all. Every person I met up with, it's it's a cruel time. I'm not allowed to see DC movies anymore. My Lord and Savior won't allow it. Only Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Marvel. Yeah, it's going to be like some guy and like he's blacked out on the documentary. It's probably going to be me. Like, yeah, I used to know Mike. He used to be really, really into football. And, you know, and like after a while, you couldn't talk to him anymore. He cut us all off.
They change your voice to sound like Donald as you're speaking just to cover it up.
With just subtitles underneath. will you be cheating the system again for your 20th Disney trip? Will you be cutting lines and pretending you guys are disabled?
No, that person will not be involved. Like, my wife actually has kind of, she follows her, but it's like she didn't block her, but she doesn't get notices about her, and she set up her comments so she won't know we're in Disney, where it's like, oh, you're there. Let me just swipe on over.
Oh, you You guys followed her all right, right into the line to get on the rides early before the poor cancer kids and the kids who have other issues.
There were no cancer kids that we cut, and we weren't aware we were cutting lines. Only
you weren't aware. I'm calling BS right now. You were surely aware that you were cutting lines and getting the nice spa treatment.
As I said before, when telling the story. Like, when we met up with our friends and we were there, it took, like, a good, like, 4 or 5 minutes where I'm like, wait a minute. What did we just do here? So.
Right.
So, I can't deny what occurred, but at least say in good faith, I didn't mean to do it, and it won't happen again.
Now, do you have your assortment of outfits planned already that I know is coming?
I don't think this is an outfit trip. I don't think so.
Mike,
like,
they're
no
all
runs
outfit
involved.
Trips. They're all outfit trips.
No, like, the wife has got outfits, but I don't know. I don't believe there's any specific t-shirts involved for this trip. And I'm being honest here. I'm not going to lie by saying it could not change, but
now when you pack your suitcase,
my knowledge as of right now, there are no outfits planned for the two of us.
I picture you packing your suitcase like, Philly shirt, Verbal Shenanigans shirt, putting your pants in, right? And then you arrive and they're all not in the suitcase, and it's just like Chewbacca sweatshirt, Yoda ears, Disney era. I feel like this is an accurate thing, or she packs the suitcase.
I believe one day I'll just be wearing a sailor shirt and no pants. I'll be Donald Ducking it.
well, that would be actually good, because it might get you kicked out of the park, which would be good for the rest of us.
it might be enough where, like, the wifey's like, oh, you're getting into the mood, and not realize it.
Now, does she ever, like, when you guys are being romantic, be like, talk to me like Donald Duck, or,
No, the love life does not intertwine with the Disney life.
Yet. Until you're like, ha ha, baby, you like it? Ha ha.
Let it go.
Let it go. Well, we'll see. I should mark this date down, and we'll see what outfits happen by the time you do go. Let's shift gears here. This kind of goes with our guest tonight. Mike, I've been I guess you could call me a beer snob for a long time. You've been into the craft beer for quite a while now. We like to try new things. Try different beers. Like you said before, the weirder, the better. You give it a try. So I wanted to go over, before we get to our guest, some of the weirdest beer and worst craft beers ever made, okay?
Oh.
And see what you would be interested in trying out of these 9, okay? Funny enough...
Were any from our former sponsors?
No. No, they were not. Funny enough, I have tried... 1, 2... I think I've tried 3 of these. Let me go through some of these and see what might entice your palate, if you will. Okay.
All right.
Now this one I've had, and this one's it's weird, but to today's standards, I don't think it's as weird. It was really weird when it came out, and that is from Rogue. Rogue used to be a brewery that when craft beer was really starting to pop up, they were like one of the ones I would go and really, you know, get, and they were. They always had different things than other people had. They kind of fell off over the years. Don't really shop for their stuff too much. But they had, and it comes in a pink bottle, and it was called Voodoo Donut, and it is a bacon maple ale. So the bottle is a bright pink color, and Voodoo Donuts is the donut shop. The beer is smoky, meaty, sickly sweet, and kind of oily. One person described it as, there are no winners here, just losers, namely me and my poor mouth. Maybe some people like beer that tastes like stale cigarettes and flop sweat. I'm not one of them. So does this sound like a beer you would like to indulge in?
I mean, the stale cigarettes and flop sweats are not up my alley, if that's what you're talking about.
Right.
I like smoke beers. I really do enjoy those. I mean, bacon kind of makes it like a smoke kind of flavor.
Right.
It all depends. I mean, it sounds like they put like 20 nice things into one bottle, figuring, well, it has to come out good.
Right.
But it did not. But I'd give it a try at the very least. Now, if it's other words, like I got to pay $8 for a bottle, I'd probably be like, nah, I can.
It's probably like it probably is about $8 because it does come in like just the one big bottle. So it might even be like about $10. I don't remember. I have had it. I remember it not being anything special. And it also, you're not getting like donuts and maple. Like it doesn't, you're not really hitting on all the notes. So that one's weird. I've had that one. But you know, nothing special. Now here's one that you might be interested in, Mike. By Weldworks Brewing, a spaghetti goes. A spaghetti goes. Within the growing popularity of salted and sour beers, we're seeing more savory creep into the craft brewer's palate. This is ridiculous, though. Made with tomatoes, pasta, and dry hopped with basil and oregano, the brewery claims spaghetti goes, or goes out, was meant to evoke vitriol reactions from the run guns, I forget how to say it, but that's like the purists, like who think that there's only four ingredients in beer. I think it's Ryan Heinz Goodbutts, and incite rage the likes of which we have never been. By all accounts, it tastes like carbonated V8 juice. So would a spaghetti goza interest you?
The second they said carbonated V8, that would be a no. Now, I've had a tomato brew down here.
Any good?
I'm trying to remember what it was called. I think it's called Attack of the Killer Tomato.
Yeah.
But I'll have to look it up. Now, that wasn't that bad. That relied more on kind of smoky earthiness. It was kind of nice. Like it was more on the sweet tomato side versus like a savory tomato, and that was pretty good with the smoke.
Yeah,
which I really enjoyed. But I can honestly say I've drank in V8 before, and like tomato juice is not up my alley. I can't do Bloody Marys or anything.
Yeah, I'm not like a big Bloody Mary guy, and I feel like if I'm drinking that, I'm gonna drink like a, you know, 6 ounce glass in the morning for like health reasons. I'm not going to drink it to enjoy on a hot summer day or something like that. So spaghetti flavored beer, Mike.
It kind of sounds like that time we did the Clamato and Bud Light on the show once.
Oh, that was, yeah, that was delicious. all right. There's a beer called Enderes by Cerveca Cerex. I'm going to butcher this. Jamon Iberico is the Spanish version of prosciutto, made from black Iberian free-range pigs that are fed a diet of acorns from the oak forest that borders Spain and Portugal. But it belongs on a plate. Like, that sounds delicious. Like, I love prosciutto. I love dried meats. Like, I'm like the worst when it comes to like parties and people put it out. I can't like pull away. It's bad. Where'd it go? Oh, there it is. But it belongs in a plate, preferably thin sliced on toast with tomato and a drizzle of olive oil, not in beer. But why stop at Jaimon Iberico? Why not put foie gras in your beer? How about caviar and gold leaf? Why not take a suitcase full of money, set it on fire, and dry hop the beer with ashes? So, Mike, would you like a prosciutto beer?
I think it's one of those, if there was a taster, I'd go for it. Mm-hmm. If you ask me to like buy like a big $12 bottle, probably a no-go.
Right.
There's something about like the combination there, like the, I don't know, ham and liquid equates in my palate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. This beer is crazy that I have had this, and I don't really know what I was thinking when I bought it, but it's called Beard Beer. Mike, Beard Beer, and it's also by Rogue Brewing. Now, this guy says he should have learned his lesson at the Voodoo Donut Beer. So the bottle of beer, Mike, is one of their brewers who has a big beard. Shocking. Okay, I feel like that's like a requirement. So the dude on the beer is Rogue Brewer John Mayer, not John Mayer the singer. He cultured yeast in the beer from his own beard. And he made a Saison-type ale with the yeast from his beard. I don't know why I bought that, but I did.
Yeah, wasn't there like a yogurt that came out with the yeast from a woman's private parts once?
Oh yeah,
I remember hearing a story like that. I think again, if I was getting a flight, I would probably just jokingly say, "Oh, what the hell? Let's see what this is."
Right.
But again, I definitely would not buy like a big bottle or a six pack of that.
What if you just opened a whole brewery that you just ferment things from your body parts?
Like every glass, like it doesn't even have a name. It's just a contest to guess where the yeast came from.
Oh, I'm dry heaving. That's so nasty.
It's like we just have like five people out there, but they're like, those are the brewers. Now it's a two-part question: which one and what place? And you get free beer for a week.
This is definitely Burlew's Armpit Ale. Oh, okay.
I detect a sour in this.
Oh god, that's really gross.
Out of curiosity, do you recall how it tasted to you?
When I remember it just being like very just like it didn't like it just tasted kind of very down the middle. Like there was no like big flavors coming out of it. Now mind you, this has probably been, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I don't even remember. And for some reason, maybe I thought that was a good idea back then, but now I'm like, that's pretty gnarly, man. That's like me taking yeast from behind my ear and making a stout. It's not something that it's very hard to market that, you know, like,
well, it might move faster than our t-shirts.
That's true. If anybody wants a Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt and some back of the knee Burlew, Burlew Saison, throw it in with Scott's Toe Jam Dark Stout. But yeah, not feeling that one. And then we have the Ghost Face Killer by Twisted Pine Brewery. It is the hottest beer of this side of hell. It's made of 6 different kinds of chili peppers, including the notorious ghost pepper. I don't know, man. I've even made spicy beers when I was brewing a lot. I made beers, one with poblanos and one with smoked jalapenos. And it was good for like the first 3 ounces. And then by the end of it, I don't want any more spice in my drink. I mean, I know you're a proponent of spicy wine. However,
yeah, however, that'll be my retirement when I'm living in Disney. Spicy wine and Mickey Mouse.
Yeah,
be my life.
You're like the weird stop in Epcot. Like, did you go get Burlew's spicy wine down there? You know, like after you go to France and after you go to Spain, go down to Burlew's spicy wine shack.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, those cast characters, they keep on trying to shoot me out, but I keep finding a way in.
You into
somebody will want my spicy wine eventually.
You into ghost pepper ale?
I once had a it was from a Coney brewery. It's a local brewery down here. It's called 31000 Habanero, which was pretty decent and all. I mean, if subtle heat with a beer is pretty nice.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, yeah, like a little bit in a stout.
A little, if there's like a side flavor with it, I can handle. If you're just like put pure heat in a can, no, because it's like if I can experience something with it, I'll give it a chance. But if you're just literally saying, oh, we just put 2,000 Skogel worth of hot peppers in there, it's like, no.
Right.
Then all it is heat, and then it's pointless.
Now, Burlew, have you had an oyster stout? I've had an oyster stout before. It puts a little saltiness into the beer. They use actual oysters.
From Dogfish, their rock lobster.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting. Like, I remember keep on saying, oh, it tastes like seawater. And they're like, no, that's the lobster. And right. I kept on, like, the next guy, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. It tastes like seawater. I'm like, no, that's a lobster.
Well, Burlew, have you ever had a Rocky Mountain oyster stout?
That's a bull testicle, if I recall.
Correct. Right? The Rocky Mountain oyster isn't a mollusk, however. It's bull's testicles. While considered an aphrodisiac, as some, they're usually served up as a prank to naive tourists in towns. The beer apparently began as an April Fool's joke, but our friends at Wincoop Brewing actually brewed a Rocky Mountain Oyster Stout. How are you feeling about that one?
I think, again, I would say taster. I'd go for it. Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, like, these exotic meals and all, chefs, they use the hearts, the testicles, the liver. They yep. use all that up, but they prepare it properly. It could taste fine, and that's probably what I feel this would be. It'd be one of those, let me taste it out, and if it's good, all right, maybe I'll buy a can of it. I don't know. I'm not going to shoo it just because of the source of it, because, I mean, hell, you eat a hot dog, you probably ate a lot worse than a bull testicle, so.
All right. I got three more for you, Berlu. Mamma Mia Pizza Beer. I've actually had this. There's no better combination in heaven than on earth than pizza and beer, okay? But Mamma Mia Pizza Beer has put it all in one glass, okay? So it's oregano, basil, tomato, and garlic in a beer.
I'll give it a whirl.
I tell you, I tried it, and it tastes like basil and garlic and oregano in a beer. It's pretty awful. I'm not gonna lie. I would never have it. Never have it again. I mean, I would try it again, but I would never order a pint of that ever.
Yeah, I would try it. I wouldn't go in there with expectations that I'm going to have a liquid pizza in my mouth, because, I mean, anybody with any kind of food, it doesn't translate once it goes through the whole beer process. But yeah, I mean, that stuff sounds, it kind of sounds like a really good olive oil, for lack of a better term.
So. Yeah, well, it's not a good beer, so I might as well use it for oil. So we got two more. Hvular 2 by Brukhaus Stjoja from Iceland. So this is a beer, okay, that was used with local ingredients. It was brewed with whale testicles smoked with sheep dung. Whale testicles, which I gotta be honest, I didn't even know whales had testicles. Like, you don't see them, like, dangling in, like, a documentary, David Attenborough documentary. So I'm like, oh, look at the whale's balls as they dangle in the ocean rift.
Yeah, you know, like, a submarine, like, rocked into one of those where the whales were.
And finally, Berlu, finally, we have The Order of Yoni by Bottled Instinct. It is fermented with microorganisms harvested from the human body. In this case, lactobacillus bacteria from supermodel Yoni apparently is vagina in Sanskrit. So yes, the bacteria is harvested from vaginal bacteria.
Yeah, like I said, I've heard that before with a yogurt. If the last two you said, I'd probably lean towards the vaginal yeast over the other one, dung. Like, anything with dung in it, it doesn't make sense. I can't fathom how you clean it enough where it's like, no, there's no bacteria in there.
I think you should make one for next week out of your own excrement and bacteria and taste it on the show for us.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I can just tell the wife not to use the upstairs toilet and just let it ferment and go for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, Berlu, those are 9 of the worst beers ever brewed. All right, Mike. So now we're going to shift gears and get to our guests. We have two on today, and they are the co-owners of a good brewery. Like, you're not going to see pizza beer. I mean, maybe you would see pizza beer, but I feel like they would make it good. hopefully no, you know, body part bacteria beers. I think that's a really niche market.
I mean, I know it will grow. It's like a stock, you know, like 20 years from now, like Toe Jam beer is going to be like IBM.
Oh God. In Brooklyn, they're all just going to be drinking like Toe Jam wild ales, you know, like it's going to be the hipster thing to do. But, so this brewery, they're the co-owners of a brewery. I vacation up in the Adirondacks, up in New York all the time, and I make sure to stop at this brewery in Glens Falls, New York. And the really cool place, really good beer. And what the coolest thing is, lately they've been getting distributed right down the block at this little liquor store by me, and I couldn't be happier. I'm like, oh wow, it's like all the stuff. It reminds me of like vacation, and I haven't had a vacation in a year and a half now, so it's like,
Have you thought about Disney?
No, because I like to see real things, ducks and.
But it's a real castle. I mean, it's a real castle.
Yeah, but coming on the show are Bert and Christian Weber. They are a father-son duo that own the brewery Common Roots in Glens Falls, and we had a really awesome discussion with them, and it's a great brewery. Go check out their beers. And without further ado, here's Bert and Christian Weber. First off, thank you guys for joining the show. It's a lot of times on the show, I try to reach out to guests where I've had like a personal connection to or something like, and Common Roots, like my family is vacationed in the Adirondacks, like right in Brant Lake up there.
That's a beautiful area. Yeah,
it's awesome. And Friends Lake before that, and before that was Loon Lake. So we've been going up for 50 years. So the years before I was even born, it's like a generational thing. It's really cool. And so I've always had a connection to the area. And I would say 8 years ago, something like that, I found a sticker of yours at the Adirondack Brewery's Oktoberfest. And I was like, Common Roots, and went and checked you guys out, and fell in love with the beer. And what is really cool is right down the street, I live in Denville, New Jersey. There now, it was like an amazing site. There's a little tiny liquor store, and now it's like they carry all Common Roots stuff. So it's like,
nice.
This is fantastic, nice. Man. This is great. So welcome to the show.
Awesome. Well, hey, cool. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you know, my dad's is a New Jersey guy over here.
I'm a Jersey boy originally.
So. Where are you from?
I grew up in a little town called Kenilworth, New Jersey.
Well, I grew up in Woodbridge.
Woodbridge. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yep. I was South Brunswick.
South Brunswick. Yes. Yes. A bunch of Jersey boys, right?
There you go.
We knew we liked you, you know?
Yeah. Don't say that yet. We still have a lot of interview to
go. Yeah, we got another 20-some minutes to fill.
So far, so good.
I guess my first question for you, people don't know, Common Roots Brewery is located in Glens Falls, New Jersey. New York. That people are like, where the hell's Glens Falls, New Jersey? You guys, what I really, the one thing that I have not been up there since, I guess you built this beautiful new facility, which we'll get to in a minute, but about 2 years ago, you guys had the tragedy of having a fire to this business that you guys have probably worked your tails off to build. What was the mindset after that happened? Was it devastation? Was it we're gonna rebuild this thing immediately? Like, what was the initial feeling? And like, I can't believe where you guys have come just from that. But what was that initial feeling like? Sorry to start on a sour note.
No, that's good. I mean, get right to it. Cheers, by the way. Yeah.
Cheers.
But I mean, you hit it on the head. It was a March 5th, 2019.
Okay. Yep.
Always be a date in our company's history, in our family's history, that, you know, is always going to be a profound timeline. You know, I mean, it was something that, like, before and after, you know, before the fire, after the fire is kind of how we talk about stuff. And, you know, it was a pretty tough day. You know, we can talk about that day particularly, but you know, broad stroke wise, it was, you know, we watched something that we put our blood, sweat, and tears, and, you know, within a couple hours, it was gone. And that was tough. You know, that was kind of everything we had. And we had built this company, and we need all these employees, and you know, we provide healthcare and all the stuff, and we're like, what do we do? It's not just us anymore, you know. We've gotten to this sizable company now, and it was It was a scary day. But, you know, the best part was that no one was hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, the worst part was over. So all you can do is go up, right? I mean, what's done is done. The hardest part was done, and let's rebuild. And what really became, I think this is where I think the story really starts is, you know, this community outreach, you know, this incredible kind of humbling experience that really came from the aftermath of having, you know, a fire that, you know, changed our trajectory of our company in a lot of ways.
Now, did that fire, like, did you guys determine what started that? Or, like, did it happen in the middle of the night or while you guys were working? Or,
yeah, I mean, it was kind of cut and dry. It was kind of a freak accident. We had a boiler vent that malfunctioned and caught on fire. I was in the bird. My dad had just gone home. I was up in my office working. The tap room was open. It was packed. It was standing room only.
It was a perfect day in the brewery, actually.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, thanks for full. You know, we just had a bunch of beer. It was just we thought it was a great day, honestly. But I got that phone call and
called my dad. And I was like, the brewery's on fire. And I was working late because we had just gotten back from Indiana. Me and our sales director, we were there doing a beer fest with Uplands Brewing and a collab and everything else. And it was, you know, I was working late.
That's gotta be
there, you know, because we were able to get everyone out and all the first responders. No one was hurt. But
did you send the first responders back in for the beer?
Make sure.
Take those buckets.
One growler at a time. Come on, let's go. Well, let's do this.
I know. Let's prioritize this.
A lot of beer.
We did save a lot of beer. In fact, we had just done this awesome collab with our good friends down in the city, KCBC, and I was wheeling the tank. It was a tank that was on wheels. We had just transferred out of barrels in this mobile tank, and I was pushing it back when one of the firefighters was like, get out of here, you know? And in fact, we also had our other friends, Big Alice from the city, that had checked into a hotel room that night because they were going to brew with us the next day.
No shit. So, really?
It's crazy. I mean, talk about saving beer. I mean, it was all about the,
they were literally standing on the street watching us. Up
place. Yeah, we're like, we're supposed to brew the next
day. It was a tough night.
It's amazing.
So what were the steps after everything happened? Is it just as a matter of, okay, we built a brewery before, let's do it again? Or what had to change going into it to get it up the second time?
Well, you know, that was part of it, honestly. We never really, honestly, the smoldering embers weren't even out when we started getting all these text messages from friends and, you know, and a lot of support for the community, and especially the beer community, too, were just reaching out to us that night. So we knew pretty quickly that, you know, we were going to have to rebuild. And I think the part that what we wanted to do was keep our presence in our community. And we knew, I think within hours, we decided we have to find a temporary space to kind of keep going here.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep our connection with our customers and our community and keep our staff employed. So that was really important. And I think literally within a day or two, we had an offer from a what would you call it? Like a local developer?
Yeah, a business colleague.
She had a spot, like an empty building.
It was awesome. That was going to be one of my next questions. Like,
yeah.
And we were there walking around that building like 2 days later and saying, oh my God, this will work. So
we can do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What was it? Like an old, it was like a car. Like a,
yeah. Her husband, who had passed away, had, he had hundreds of classic cars.
Yeah.
Away, she sold a lot of Jay Leno. And it was he had an enormous car collection. And that was one of the buildings that he was just storing cars in.
Oh, wow.
And the car, you know, there were probably 12 cars, beautiful cars that were there.
Motorcycle,
And you know, she was like, listen, we can push them this side, you can board up this side, and you can do it. And we're like, all right, this will work. We can do this.
It was incredible. I went up last October. I'm like, hey, we got to stop at Common Roots on the way up. I know they have a temporary location. I don't know what it's like. I said, I like the old brewery. It was cool. It was a little small. I was like, holy shit. Like, this is really nice. Like, that even that set, you guys had like cornhole set up and tables. And and I brought up friends that had never been there. Like, this brewery is great. I'm like, this isn't even their brewery. You know, like this.
This is just like the purgatory spot.
But it was cool because it had like the race car checkered flag floor. Yes,
it was. Yes. That mint green and black floor. In fact, when we got it, we walked in, the walls were all mint green too. Yeah. And I was like, ugh. And my dad like, no, we can make this work. You know, he had the eye for it.
Yeah.
And, it was, but it, yeah, the floor was special.
Yeah.
It was good. It had this like almost like 50s doo-wop kind of thing.
It did.
Yeah, you want to almost be on roller skates. You know what I mean? Like when you're serving.
You guys did that, right? You guys did the roller skates.
Yeah, it might have been some fun nights there.
I always heard beer and wheels always work great together.
Yes, that's it. Something about that.
So let's get into the origins of Common Roots. You know, your father-son team, which is tremendous, which I do want to break down in a little bit, but... What was the origin to it? Like, were you guys both home brewers and got into it? How did you actually start the brewery or take that step from, hey, we really love home brewing to, oh my God, we can make this a business. What was that whole process like?
Well, I mean, the home brewing part was certainly fun as a father and son kind of stuff. And, you know, we had Christian had an uncle who was really kind of a big home brewer, and he kind of gave us a lot of equipment that kind of inspired us to kind of do this. You know, my family being from Germany, I mean, beer was always an important part of our life. So when I was a little kid, it was very exciting. But honestly, after the home brewing experience, you know, Christian was heading off to college and was in college. And he really took it to a whole nother level and then kind of came back and we circled around. And that's all we talked about, honestly. That, you know, what a cool industry it was, honestly, he had from a home brewer to working in some small microbreweries over in New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
He cut his chops over there, and so he had some commercial experience too, and that was really important, and it kind of showed that there was a transition we could make from being home brewers to commercial size. Otherwise, I think it's kind of a mistake to go from just being a home brewer to.
It's tough. And, you know, at the time it was, you know, it was a great bonding experience. It's fun to make beer, right?
Yeah,
it was
great. Beer.
Popular guy in college making beer, you know, especially when maybe you couldn't maybe legally buy it, but you can make it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There are a couple different breweries that I, you know, interned at and then did an apprenticeship and worked at and whatnot. But there was the first one that we actually don't talk about a lot was actually, I would help out this guy. He had a small brewery before nano breweries were a thing. Now we know it as the nano brewery. It's a term we use, but you know, in 2007 or whatever it was, that wasn't totally in our, you know, normal vernacular.
Yeah.
But there was a little brewery called Squamlet's Brewing. This kid was not much older than me. I was, you know, 21 years old, and he was maybe 27 years old or something like that. And he was an engineer, and he was brewing on this one barrel system in his parents' bar, and he was bottling everything. And I just remember being like, he quit his job to do this. And I just saw he was like going to the market, and you could go to a grocery store in our local college town and see his bottled beer there. And it was so cool to me.
Right.
That this guy could do it. And it, you know, and I was home brewing a lot, and I started as an apprenticeship. And I started brewing. I worked at another brewery that was, you know, significantly larger than that. And it became, you know, I got this flavor for the industry. I was coming back telling my dad, I'm like, this is really cool. And, you know, the next brewery I kind of worked at was a Belgian style brewery, at least at the time they were. It has different ownership now. And a wit beer, by the way. We do a lot of IPAs, a lot of sours, but this is a nice little wit beer we have.
Yeah.
And they were doing stuff that was different. They were barrel aging. They were using wild yeast. And it was something that really kind of got me excited about the industry, because there all of a sudden there was this like culinary side. There was this experimental side. And there was this something that I hadn't quite seen yet in the landscape of the craft beer movement. And, you know, we talked you know, it took us many years after that to do this, but we wanted to, you know, we decided we were going to open a brewery. We wanted to do it, and we wanted to do it a little different. And we wanted to have this portfolio that was diverse but approachable. And those are two things that were important, right? You wanted to have something that was, you know, didn't matter who walked in. Whether you were a newbie to beer or craft beer or anything, you could have something and feel comfortable and feel like you were welcome in our tap room, in our brewery, and with our portfolio. But that's the most important. We're not trying to be exclusive. We're not trying to do something that's crazy. We're happy that there were lines outside of our brewery for can releases. That's cool, but that wasn't what we were going for.
Right.
What we're going for is having this approachable and diverse, you know, and innovative portfolio. And that was always something that was kind of important to us. And a lot of that came from, you know, working at particular spots and my father and I enjoying this heritage of beer that was always a little different, you know. And, you know, we understand now, you know, I think if you get our beer in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and wherever, you know, throughout New England, there's a lot of IPA we brew. So I'm not trying to say we don't, you know, we're not just making IPA, but, you know, we were one of the first breweries in the, you know, New York State that ran a cool ship and developed this, you know, spontaneous inoculation, this very enormous wild beer program that we have. And although we maybe pay our bills making, my dad's drinking Patch, one of our newer IPAs, and it's delicious. And I'm happy we get the source hops from, you know, all over the, you know, the world now. But we really do care about, you know, a lot of the styles that maybe don't make any money, you know, like no one's, I'll tell you what, you're not making any money making cool ship, spontaneous barrel aged 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not something, but it does.
It gets us excited.
It gets us excited. And that's
what's awesome.
It's always about the craft. And, you know, we've kind of, you know, that's a heritage and a culture of our company that's important to our ethos. And we want to kind of keep that going.
That's great.
Yeah. You talk a lot about, like, culture, and I've been going to breweries for years now. Scott got me into it, and I do it now down here in Georgia. I always find it interesting. I'd like to bring up when we talk to brewers, like, Coke isn't talking about, hey, Pepsi, you make a great soda. Burger King ain't talking about McDonald's, you make a good burger. Why is it with, like, craft communities, it seems like everybody is, like, intertwined and almost love each other. Like, it's not even a competition. You're actually rooting for everybody.
You're so right, man. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You hit it on the head, because that is, you know, one of the reasons why we fell in love with the beer industry. It was that it's so collaborative. You know, the night we were talking about the fire, there was two breweries we were with, you know what I mean? It's like this whole, you know, it's the rising tide floats all ships, right? What's good for one, it's good for everyone. And that's really what it's all about. You know, as much as, you know, we love Common Roots, I'll tell you what, I'm always excited to try different beers, and, you know, I might buy volume, drink Common Roots the most just because it's free and we can have a pretty good, you know, we have pretty good access to it. But, you know, there, if we're traveling, you know, and we're fortunate to be able to, you know, when it's not a freaking pandemic, you know, to travel for beer and, you know, to go to collaborations with other breweries throughout the, you know, the country and whatnot. But it's, you know, the coolest thing is to walk into a town and that you've never been and find some local brew pub and enjoy their beer. And
literally the first thing I do when I go somewhere. What's the beers here? And then it, like,
you're excited to see that brewery that's doing awesome and to see all of their success, to try their new beers. And it's not a competition, because you might have the day of the beer drinker who just drinks that beer is kind of slowly fading away. You might be, you know, 9 times out of 10 drinking this particular style of beer, but you're still 10% that you're trying. You're going to try something different. You know, and that might be even more. You might try, 20% of the time you're trying something different. And it's this entire landscape of wonderful different beers that are out there that are available to us now. And it's like this, it's new paradigm that the beer world lives in.
Right. It kind of goes back to, like, like World War II, before all refrigeration and all the metal was sold off, and like kind of goes back to that, where every like city and town had the local brewery, you know, like that was the place to go get a beer, and then like it kind of all went away after that. It's really cool to kind of see it in fruition, and you're like, yes, a new brewery opened up in the town next door, and then a new brewery opened up. Like, it's really fun to see, and it's like, it's almost evidence that, like, being a local brewery is enough to survive. Of course we want to send our beer all over the world and grow a company, but even just being the local brewery, it is enough to survive, like, for a lot of companies.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You hit on the head. I mean, we only just recently surpassed the amount of breweries that we had in the country pre-prohibition.
Yep.
Right? Like, since Common Roots was an entity, we surpassed that number. And, like, you know, now it's almost doubled, right? You know, and it's amazing. We live, you know, everyone in this country lives within, you know, statistically a mile of a local brewery. And that's an amazing thing. That's going back to the good old days. You know, where you can go to your local watering hole and get a, you know, and get a growler of some delicious local beer. And, you know, it's changed. The craft beer has changed, right? I mean, we can say
always. It's always
here with
waves.
Waves. Down in Georgia, you got a Sweetwater, big, enormous, awesome brewery. Love Sweetwater. You know, there's the big craft breweries, and, you know, if you talk to the Sam Calagiones of the world, the Jim Cooks, the Greg Cooks of Stone, you know, the guys who were kind of the Ken Grossmans, the patriarchs of what we consider, like, the craft beer movement in this country, of Gen 1, Gen 2 of it, you know, the size craft brewery probably won't happen again, right? You won't see another Sierra Nevada that comes out, because there are so, and this is awesome, there are so many awesome small local craft breweries, microbreweries that are really dominating the landscape. And that's a really great thing. When you go to store, you know, to get a local baker, you know, a local whatever, you know, that's what people look for now. They are going to farmers markets. They want to see what's happening in their community. They want to support their community. And that's really where the craft beer movement, you know, kind of the local war of the world, you know, that's where it all came from.
So let me ask you, working, so from going from father and son, we like brewing beer together, to becoming, okay, now we're business partners and we got to work. Like I work with my dad, and it ends up me holding the flashlight and the ladder for him to do all like that. That's basically like, and it's so embarrassing to be in your mid-30s and holding the ladder and all that. Like, working, when it becomes a business and it becomes your livelihood and it becomes your passion project, does that father and son bond stay all the time? Are there challenges? And what is that like to go home every night, go to your house and sit down and be like, I got a business with my son, or I got a business with my father? That's got to be an amazing thing.
Well, it really is. I mean, I think very quickly when we decided we wanted to have a brick and mortar kind of, you know, building, and we found this old building, we fixed it up together. I mean, there was a very much a definition of kind of talents and who could bring what at the table at that point. Now, Christian had the commercial brewing experience.
Right.
So, you know, we relied on him heavily to kind of, you know, design the systems for the new brewery and how we could build it out and stuff like that. But we actually had this old building that needed a lot of work. And you know, my summer positions, I worked in the building trades. And we built our own house and things like that. So I had the construction knowledge. So, you know, it wasn't anything that honestly scared us as far as renovation and old building. So we found this old structure in a really very, very busy spot in this little South Dunce Falls of New York. And it was at a price we could afford. And we said, all right, if we do the work ourselves, we can do this. So, you know, it was this kind of gentle transition, or maybe not such gentle all the time, but was, you know, during the construction and renovation project, I was kind of I kind of led the team there. And
then the foreman,
And we kind of switched over to the actual, when we could hand over to the building, to the actual brewing process, then Christian became, and I had to kind of, you know, look at, all right, this is where he's going to, you know, be the lead here. And I need to learn this stuff now too. Because I had no commercial brewing experience.
Okay.
Honestly. I knew the concepts, but it's a big difference from going from, you know, doing a, you know, a barrel and a half in your garage to, you know, 10 barrels, 30 barrels.
Like, and what about you, Christian? Like, what's that like working with your father?
Well, you know, that's a great thing. That's a great question, because a family business, mm-hmm. You know, is a lot more multidimensional than any other business. We're involved with other businesses and whatnot, and you know, but it's different when you're family. It brings in this different, you know, level of, you know, of everything. You know, at the end of the day, my father. You know, and we're family, you know, and it's not just that. I mean, my mother is just as much, you know, she's a third owner of the building, you know, she does our bookkeeping. My wife builds all of our equipment. You know, she runs a company that builds. I mean, we are a family business. My brother-in-law's, my sister's.
That's awesome.
We are a family company in its full, you know, by the full definition of it. And it's very rewarding. It allows, you know, I realize that I've been kind of gifted in a lot of ways, this experience that in some ways, you know, my sisters aren't going to have, because I get to experience my parents, working with them every day in a different, you know, light than they ever have experienced. You know, they're parents to them, and my dad's still my dad, but he's also my business partner. My mom's still my mom, but she's also my business partner, you know? And it has this very, you know, and there, of course there's struggles, and we still have to figure out, we have to tread lightly on certain things and understand stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is even more rewarding, because you get to go to work with your family. And if you can navigate that, that's you want, because there's nothing that's more important. You don't go into beer business to make money.
Mm-hmm.
You go in because you care and you're passionate about the craft. And Common Roots has always been set up, and it's been this experiment of like really community. You know, we're so lucky. We have this kind of bigger company now. We're in the top 25 largest breweries in the state. And, you know, we have this really, really strong cohort of coworkers that we get to work with. And you know what? They're all part of our family. And, you know, we don't see a lot of turnover. We have people that have been with us from year one and two. We actually just lost some of our first original employees because they had a baby and some other stuff.
How dare they? Oh, come on.
How dare
so selfish.
That's what we
what
said.
What part of this family business
I know,
made you think you can have a family?
But that's really it. And I think that, you know, it's important to us to have this culture. And, you know, it is, you know, it's, I've learned a lot from seeing other family businesses. You know, it does add a level of, I don't want to use the word stress because that's not it, but it does add an asterisk next to everything. Because
right.
You're, you know, it's more important than everything else, because at the end of the day, it's my father. Yep. And family's everything. You know, you don't go in again. This isn't like we're not managing a freaking hedge fund. You know what I mean? We went into something because we cared about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like some cutthroat industry that we're trying to like do something. It's like, this is it. You know, we're making beer. Let's keep it cool, you know.
And the industry itself is pretty individual, so that's been beneficial that way too. But yeah, but you know, we also sat down and we kind of looked at why we're going into this business too. I mean, there had to be some very kind of clear guidelines and goals that we wanted to do, and kind of principles that we wanted to adhere to as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the business plan had been kind of a changing document as we kind of moved through this process here, but it's the principles have not changed why we're doing this and how we want to do and how we want to be perceived in the community.
That's awesome.
Now, you guys talk a lot about it. You're very passionate, and I'm sure you've done a lot of, like, playing around and experimenting. I'm just kind of curious if there was ever like a brew you were like really excited, like you had an idea like, man, this is going to be so great, and then it just came out and it was like, last time we ever do that.
Happens all the time. No, it does in a sense that, like, you know, you only get one shot to make a first impression, right? And the first time, Scott, you came to the brewery, if you would have had a beer that we were like, about,
right,
you might not have come back to us. We might not be, you know, able to talk to you right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for us, like, yeah, like, we always want to be creative and we're excited about, you know, pushing the envelope in terms of like what sort of beers are brewed, but sometimes you're right, like sometimes it's a swing and a miss, and that is a real thing. And it doesn't turn out. So, like, you know what, it's tough, especially now we got some big tanks, you know, we brew 60 barrel batches of beer, and that's a that hurts a little more when you break out and it has to go down drain. But it's a lot worse if, you know,
everyone hates it. Yeah,
they put it out if it's a mediocre product, and then you guys are, you know, we distribute it down in New Jersey, and you guys try it, and like, yeah, how many wasn't that great?
Yeah, I'm not gonna buy that again. Yeah,
I'm not gonna buy it again. You get that one shot, and that's always something that we're
those were painful discussions, honestly, and decisions, but we knew it was the right thing to do. But way back when, we weren't making any money, and you know, I mean, you look at a beer that didn't turn out, and you're like, okay, and we just watch it go down the drain. You know, 20 barrels at that time was a lot of money for us, but to just pour it down the drain and say, all right, let's start over.
So this leads me to the new brewery, which, because of COVID, I was not able to get up there yet. Hopefully this summer. You have this from the picture, even like the drawings you guys had, I was like, oh my God, this place looks like it's going to be, you know, amazing. How did the new brewery come into fruition? And how is it going? And, do you guys serve space there? 'Cause that's my favorite IPA from you guys. So,
good. Space is getting brewed next week. Again.
Let's go.
We just had a nice batch of it, but it is, you know what? It was very sad when the brewery burned.
Yep.
Because I had envisioned, you know, my dad and I did everything ourselves. I envisioned walking around, my wife's pregnant, with my grandchildren someday and like showing everything that, right, you know.
The beginning, yeah.
And I did. And now we have this state-of-the-art facility. It was a forced expansion. It's not how we wanted to do it, and I wouldn't recommend brewery. It was not how we wanted to do it, from everything, dealing with insurance and blah blah, but like we had to, you know, we decided if we're going to do this, might as well expand and do things. And we had, you know, thankfully some experience in what we wanted to do. We, you know, we did get to build the final brewery, right? We built the dream brewery that we always
destination
wanted. And we got to take into a lot of, you know, different levels of technology that probably weren't accessible to us from day one because of budget reasons. And we have this green facility that has 100,000 kilowatt, you know, solar array and solar water heaters and all this, you know, different types of technology. So we can be not only a good community steward, but a, you know, sustainable community member as well. But it is, it's pretty freaking badass.
It's so awesome looking.
Gorgeous, you know, tap room with a lot of, you know, local wood that's used from barns and
repurposed wood.
I mean, it's just pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, we had to pinch ourselves. We were walking through right before we opened. And we're kind of like a little bit, you know, it was overwhelming, you know, and like, wow, I can't believe this is where we started now. I think every one of our coworkers have kind of walked around on the same thing. It's pretty awesome. It was a kind of a crazy 2 years to get to it. And again, not how we wanted to do it, but if you get, you know, life serves you lemons, you make lemonade, right? And
that's it.
That's all you can do. You can't cry anymore, right? You can't cry over spilled beer. The fire
happens. You can. You can for a little bit, because I've done it.
It's not fun, right?
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'd love for you guys to come up. We're open in a sense. We only do to go. So from the day we opened in July, we decided for us and for our staff, we didn't, even though we could have, we didn't want to fully open for on premise. So we were still doing to go food, because we have a full kitchen here, and to go beer. And we're going to continue that until we feel like the world is.
It's going to change. We're coming back.
We're getting light at the end of the tunnel now, right?
Exactly.
Yep. We're getting.
We're getting there, you know. And hopefully, maybe the late spring, summer, we're kind of in a position. We got an enormous beer garden, big fire pits outside. Yes. You know, outdoor bars. It's going to be a cool spot. And I think it's going to be a fun spot to hang out at. So.
Music, food, and beer. Come on.
Man, what more do you want? Right.
How can you complain?
What beers do you guys like to drink? Talk to us about your what's your go IPA, Scott. You're a space guy. What else?
Well, I'm a little bit of everything. IPA is like the everyday go to kind of, but I love a barrel-aged stout as much as I love a weird, funky sour in the summer that I open up and haven't touched for a year, you know, see what happens. So I'm kind of all over the map, but I guess I'm more of a, these days, not a triple IPA guy, but like, you know, in that 6-7%, you know, easy drinking kind of, that's my everyday kind of thing, so.
Yeah, I mix it up a lot myself, too. I like red ales a lot. I probably lean towards those, but I mix and match between a stout, an IPA, a lager. I'm basically for the adventure. The weirder it sounds, the more I'm intrigued.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're our guy, then. Good. We like that.
Awesome.
So I'll tell you what, when we open, you guys should come on up. We should do,
we'll do a live podcast
right in the beer garden or something and try some beer off the
sounds amazing. That's
always fun. That'd be a trip for me, but that sounds awesome to me.
He'll come up. He doesn't go anywhere but Disney, so this would be a welcome trip.
Sorry, it's like the Disney of Southland Falls, you know. We're gonna put down a freaking coaster, yeah. You know.
Yeah, if you just have a person in a mouse outfit, so I can trick my wife, that'd be perfect.
You probably handle that, you know.
I know we're coming up on time right now, but being a father and son, I think everybody growing up has a story of being out with their dad, and when you're like 8, 10, 13, or whatever, and dad has a can of beer and he's like, you want to try a taste and all. I'm just kind of curious, Christian, do you remember the first time your dad handed over your beer and said, hey, you want to try this?
He was 3 months old.
I think it actually starts from my opa, to tell you the truth, my father's father. You know, my dad is the only sibling born in the U.S. He's a very German. I had an opa and an oma as my grandparents. And awesome. I remember having a taste of a couple tastes of a beer pretty early on, and it was a nice German lager.
What was that day like at preschool after that? Was it hard?
Let me tell you. I walked in, I had this look in my eye, and I was like,
Why does Christian love nap time so much today? It's
that was what it was, yeah. I had this like level of confidence. But you know, it's funny though. That's a moment in my head, but I also remember my dad always had like a mixed pack of Sam Adams or Sierra Nevada at the house. And I remember, you know, drinking, you know, Sierra Nevada Pale, Boston Lager, Sierra Nevada Celebration. Those were beers that were honestly pinnacle in my kind of upbringing.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm excited.
Me Sierra too. Nevada
out, because that's a go-to beer, and it was something that my father was drinking when it wasn't cool to be drinking crap beer, and it was you know, it goes back to the beer culture and just the importance of that in our kind of heritage. But that's, you know, those were the styles I remember going to college, and I drank, you know, you could buy Keystone 10 bone 30 stones for 10 bones.
Yeah man,
I had a bunch of those. But I remember also drinking Trout River, which is a brewery that's no longer around in New Hampshire. But I remember getting six packs of that, and they had a red ale and something else. And I remember being so jazzed up. My roommates were like, what the hell is that? And I remember being like, this is being, it was cool. That's, you know, awesome. And it reminded me of some of those first, you know, sips of beer.
That's awesome. Bert, Christian, I'm so glad to talk to you guys. I really enjoyed our time. I hope to be up there this summer. You guys inspire me. It's always been kind of in the back of my head to do the brewery thing forever. So seeing the father-son dynamic between you guys and the beers you're putting out, and now that I can get them down the street is phenomenal. I talk about your beer to different people around here. But thank you so much for coming on. If people want to go check out Common Roots, where is the best place for them to go check them out?
You know, I would say go to our website. And, it, you know, the best thing is we do have a distribution map of all the states that we distribute to and the distributing partners that we work with. And, you know, contact those distributors because they are able, first of all, it lets them know that you want more Common Roots. And the other thing is that they can tell you by the day where Common Roots is being sold for fresh, awesome new beers.
That's awesome. All right, Mike. Only a matter of time before Common Roots hits Georgia. Only a matter of time.
I would love to try out some of their brews. You know me, I'm all about it. Like, anytime I do travel that's not to that other place, I always try to find local breweries or whatever. Technically, they do have a brewery over there.
Oh, but great. I'm so glad you're sucking down Donald Duck IPAs and enjoying yourself.
No, it's outside. It's associated with, like, a brewery in Tennessee or something like that. Mm-hmm. But,
oh, Minnie's Big Stout. Ho-ho, this is great. Like,
gosh, this is heavy.
That's how you'll make your wife a beer drinker. As soon as Disney puts one in there, she'll be like, I love this. But, Berla, what do you got before we go?
Well, how's your sleep patterns been, out of curiosity?
Not great. Not great. Never been a great sleeper. Having a kid has even through more of a wrench in that. So lately I've been noticing the pattern is get the kid to bed because he doesn't sleep during the day like at all, which is I'll trade it in because he does sleep at night. So I would take the night over, you know, a kid who doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good balance.
So, you know, I'm still wound up from the day sometimes, so I need a little bit. And my wife will go to bed before me. And I'll go up to bed, and then, you know, 1-ish, 2-ish, he starts to stir, has to get fed. Then it takes me a while to settle down, get back to sleep. And then sure enough, my dog starts to move around, and he's been going out a lot lately in the middle of the night. I assume it's just because he's getting older, and he's also on a bunch of medications right now, so he pees a lot. Mm. So then I take him out. I go out in the cold. It, like, wakes me up. And then I go back to bed, try to fall asleep. Baby starts stirring again around 5. Before you know it, I got to get out the door for work. Like, so yeah, not great. Not great.
Not great. Yeah, so I've been having struggles myself. And in fact, like, a couple nights ago, I had, like, some kind of night terror. I brought this up before. Once in a blue moon, I'll just have a dream. I can't even remember exactly what happened in the dream after I wake up. But basically, I just start screaming in my sleep, and the wife has to wake me up to kind of, like, calm me down. And it takes me like an hour and a half to calm down or whatever. But the reason I brought up sleep was about, I would say, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had, like, the weirdest dream where I could see pretty much all the components why it would be in my head. But there was, like, a one little weird part in the ending. So I wanted to share you my dream that I had.
Okay.
Well, I was basically in my bed watching TV. It specifically, it was ABC News. Like, it was literally whoever does, like, the 7 o'clock nightly news, the national one, was on there. And it was a story about how Trump, some of his, like, policies caused big problems in farming, and they had a special one just on the pumpkin farmers of the world.
Oh boy.
And they're going to, like, interviewing all the couple different farmers, and then they bring up, apparently, well, in the dream, apparently there's swamp pumpkins where, like, there's farmers that grow pumpkins that are just, like, you're in the swamp, and it's, like, at the bottom of the lake or whatever, and they're, like, doing this news coverage of, like, the plight of the swamp pumpkin farm.
This is so really specific. Like, I picture them, yeah, like, going deep down and picking up this, like, murky, disgusting pumpkin and, like, dusting it off and be like, it's delicious.
Yeah, so somehow I said to myself, hey, I wonder if I can, like, grow pumpkins. So I go back to the house I grew up in South Brunswick, New Jersey, which was right by a lake. Mm-hmm. And I go in the canoe and I just go out there and I just, like, rowing in, looking at, like, swamp pumpkins. So then I said, well, I got to get a better view if I'm going to figure out how I become a swamp pumpkin farmer. So I jump into the lake and I'm, like, swimming around in this lake. And then all of a sudden, like, there's a snake in front of me. So I'm like swimming back to get a pumpkin
farmers. No, snakes are you know, they're pretty common in the on the work site.
Well, again, I flew up to New Jersey to learn stuff, so I didn't read up before dove into the swamp for the pumpkins. So I'm like swimming away as this snake's trying to chase me, and then I turn and there's another one there, and it bit me right on the finger. As you may remember, the finger that was kind of plump a couple weeks ago.
Right.
So,
which, by the way, would be a way better story if this was real. Like so Scott, you're never going to believe what happened to my finger. I was swamp pumpkining again, and a snake came up and bit my index.
Yeah. They keep on telling me, stop jumping in the water. I'm like, I ain't going to learn anything on shore. So the dream kind of ends. I'm in the emergency room waiting for a doctor to look at my finger. And the part I can't figure out how it got into the dream, while I'm in the waiting room, Nicki Minaj's WAP is playing, like, really loud. Like, I'm just sitting there looking, staring at my finger that got bitten by a snake. Bitten finger,
yep, yep.
And, like, literally, like, just, like, blasting is the WAP song. And that's the one part I don't understand was in the dream. But
Wait. So you understand why swamp pumpkining and the snakes and going to your childhood house to row into the lake are in the dream?
Well, there are things in my life. I mean, this was pre the election, so everything on the news was Trump stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you know I do pumpkin spice, whatever.
Well, next year is going to be crazy when you try a swamp pumpkin on the last day of the month.
Swamp pumpkin ice cream, buddy. Going back to the childhood lake and the finger. That all makes sense. Nicki Minaj's WAP? Don't know why it was in there.
I always hope, like, one day they come up with some kind of technology they could record your dream somehow and broadcast them onto a screen, because I just want to see this. Like, I want to see it played out in a movie. I want to see you swimming around. And, like, as far as, like, to me, the more entertaining part is you, like, diving deep into the bottom of these lakes and pulling up pumpkins. And, like, this sounds like a dangerous job. Like, you know, like, you know those guys who do the noodling, like they catch the catfish with their hands and pull them out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This sounds like it would be right up there. Like, oh, you got to go deep down. The good pumpkins are all the way at the bottom. You got to, like, hold your breath and free dive all the way down and pull one up. There's snakes and gun as well. Nicki Minaj, I don't know. Maybe that's just a song. Like, maybe that's like a guilty pleasure for you. Maybe you like that song a lot.
I don't think I ever heard it all the way through.
Or maybe it stands for wet ass pumpkin.
Make it drop all those wet ass pumpkins.
Oh man, we've lost our minds.
Well,
I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, I think it's a good business model. Maybe it was like, you know, encouraging you what to do when you get down to Florida and you move outside Orlando. You're gonna need a job to keep up that Disney habit. So I feel like
they
swamp,
have a lot of swamp land.
A lot of swamps. Probably not a lot of pumpkins down there. So swamp pumpkins could be a big thing. Cinderella, swamp pumpkin. You know? So I don't know, man. Maybe this is like your calling in life. Like, some people find their calling through dreams. Some see like a star. Some, it just comes to them in the middle of the day and they quit everything. Maybe this was your cue. No more IT, no more podcasting. It's all swamp pumpkining and Disney from here.
I think I could still do the podcasting in swamp pumpkining, Scott.
Dude, you don't know what kind of demand that job's going to be, like how many hours a day. I'm sure there's a process.
Clearly, I don't know the demand. I jumped into water and got attacked by a snake.
Right, but you don't know if you're going to be all tired from a long day of swamp pumpkining, and you're not going to want to talk to, like, you know, brewers and stuff like that after swamp pumpkining. You're going to become the guy that we're going to want to get on the podcast, because after this, I'm going to Google swamp pumpkin and see if there's... if there's someone on, and you know sure as hell if there is.
Oh my god, that would be the greatest. That's up there with the snake milker when we got him.
Right. You know damn well I'm going to Google it, and I'm like, oh my God, there's a Swamp Pumpkin Ranch in Wyoming somewhere, and we're going to reach out to them, and it's going to happen. That's basically was the genesis of this podcast anyway. We were talking about a hippo joke, talking about a hippo attack, how bad it would suck. Got a hippo attack survivor on. It emboldened us to get guests on the show, and it's been kind of going ever since. So don't.
First day we got a Twitter account, we talked to Sean Kemp.
Yeah, not on the podcast, but we talked to him.
Yeah. That's still pretty amazing. Like, literally, I remember we made the account, and then we sent a thing to Sean Kemp, and he's like, sure.
Yep. And I talked to him for, like, I'm going to be honest, maybe 11 minutes on the phone, just talking to him and, like, saying, oh, yeah, we want to schedule you, and how you doing, where you at, and he never showed up, Sean. Which is proving right now we have another one of the Mount Rushmore guests possibly coming on the show, and they've gone radio silent. So I don't know. Maybe we scare them away.
I don't know what we talk about that would scare people away.
This exact thing. They're like, these guys sound like great.
This is the thing that screws us up.
Yeah.
My dreams about swamp pumpkin. Yeah,
that's what I mean.
You feel we should cut that out.
Yeah. This isn't going to make the final episode. You know that, right?
No.
But like I said, on your Disney documentary, there's going to be the blacked out me. Be like, yeah, one day he told me I'm moving to Orlando, becoming a swamp pumpkiner, and I'm going to Disney all the time. And that was the last time I ever heard from Mike. That's kind of how these things end.
I should have Googled where are crocodiles in Florida before I started that business.
Yeah. All right, Mike, it's time to get out of here. Great episode tonight. Thank you to Bert and Christian of Common Roots. We got a lot of things coming down the line, a lot of cool guests. Please check us out on all social media platforms. All social media platforms. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. And please share the podcast with your friends if you enjoyed what you heard tonight. Berlew, anything to promote before you go?
I guess I'll promote another brewery since we talk to some great people. I'll do a local one here. We'll do Lime Creek Brewing down in Peachtree City, Georgia. Went down there a couple weeks back and all after helping out my father. They have a beautiful bar room with plenty of seating. They have outdoor for special events, for cornhole and stuff like that. They're going to put on concerts out there. Great set of brews that I had there. Their Christmas ale I had during that week was amazing. Really enjoyable. Can't wait. I'm back in the area. It's in Peachtree City, Lime Creek Brewing Company.
All right. Now, I'm going to promote something. Now, by the time this episode comes out, it may or may not be over with, but I'm assuming there will be a lot of content from it. And it goes. So this comes out on Monday. It's been going, I guess, since Friday. I'm on it. It is the Guinness World Records attempt at breaking the world record for longest comedy show ever held. Now, it's going Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, so it might still be on when you listen to this. Now, it's cool because not only are we trying to break the record, but it's from our buddies at Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling, Mark Rigadonna, and a couple other guys. But it's all benefiting a children's charity, Brain Tumor Foundation, and Star Treatments. Any money raised is going towards that. And so many of my friends, comic friends, are on it. So it should be a good time. I'm performing at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. I know that's prime comedy time. So by the time this comes out, I had already done my set, and I'll talk about it on next week's cast. But it's a really good cause. So if you want to go check it out, or even if you missed it, there's a donation spot there. It's comedyworldrecord.com. Comedyworldrecord.com. So we'll see how it goes. Other than that, guys, podcast is going well in 2021. Lots of cool guests booked and coming up. And that's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Macaroni in the pot. That's some wet ass pumpkins.